Hello, and welcome to Between Two Term Sheets, Canada's only podcast that invites investors and founders to discuss the early stage funding environment in the high technology space. Our host is Owen Matthews, founder, CEO, serial investor, and general partner at Wesley Clover International.
Welcome again to another episode of Between Two Term Sheets. Today I have the fortunate couple of guests, Senia and Sophia from HarborVestor with us. Would you say hi?
Hi.
Thanks so much for joining us. Maybe you could take a moment and introduce yourself. We'll start with Senia, and how you came into getting involved in funds and then fund to funds and HarborVest.
Absolutely, thank you, Owen. So my name is Senia Rapisarda. As you can hear from my accent, I'm Italian, but I've been living in the UK, in the US, and now in Canada for the last 30 years, and Canada has been 8 very exciting years. So I've been involved with HarborVest now for the past 5 years. Previously, I used to work in London and New York for some large firms in private equity adventures. HarborVest is one of the largest private equity firms, so we'll talk about this in a little while, but let me pass on and introduce Sophia.
Sure, thank you. So I joined HarborVest about 3.5 years ago, shortly after Senia launched the office in Toronto, which is the first Canadian office for HarborVest. Prior to that, I was at EDC, Export Development Canada, based in Ottawa, doing similar stuff to what I do now at HarborVest, which is investing in funds and investing directly into growth and earlier venture opportunities. So it was exciting jump for me to join such a sort of well-known global platform, but also a bit of a startup in the Canadian market in our own right.
That's great. Now, HarborVest has been around for a long time. I was fortunate enough to meet one of the founding partners when I saw you recently in Toronto. So maybe you can introduce us to HarborVest history and the type of things that they do, where they fund, what they fund.
Absolutely. So HarborVest was founded in 1982, and we have around 60 billions of U.S. dollars of asset under management. We have 400 plus employees, and more than 100 are investment professionals. We were based in Boston, the main office, and the other offices around the globe are in London, Tokyo, or several in Asia, in Seoul, Beijing, and Hong Kong. And of course, now we have Toronto and Bogota. So the three main things that we do are, we invest in funds, which sometimes are called primary investments. We invest in company, and sometimes you can hear them called co-investment or direct investment. And we invest in secondaries, meaning that we invest in previous positions held by other partners, limited partners in companies or in funds. Private equity is all we do. Inside private equity, we also now have a subsector within infrastructure. And we have one of the longest track record in the industries. We were among the first groups to invest in Kleiner or Accel or groups in Silicon Valley and really creating the industry in the U.S.
Well, the global perspective really matters a lot. It's important to look around the world. As you know, we operate funds in many different places around the world. And you learn so much from the ways in which business operates in other places. So having a global perspective with respect of funds and fund to funds is very, very valuable. Now, this is relatively, HarborVest is relatively new to Canada. Tell us, how are we comparing? What are you seeing in Canada relative to, say, obviously the more mature market in the US and other emerging fund markets around the world?
Okay, I will start with funds, and then maybe Sophia will just talk a little bit more about direct companies. So actually, HarborVest has been in Canada for almost 2 decades as a direct investor. We were one of the first investors in Kinaxis, which went public, I think, 3 or 4 years ago, Owen, in Ottawa. Mm-hmm. And we were on that board of that company for, I believe, over 12 years. And we had around half a billion invested in Canada indirectly. We also had large clients. And to be clear for our audience, in groups like ours, the majority of our LPs, which means limited partners, are usually pension plans, endowments, banks, corporates, but also more and more what we call the high net worth individual and family office that are really approaching the private equity asset class with lots of interest. So in terms of the difference, what we've seen for Canada, of course, there is a big difference between venture growth and private equity. Specifically, Sophia and I and our fund in Toronto, we're looking after the venture and growth side. In Canada, that was always a little bit immature compared to the U.S., but has been catching up really nicely, I would say, in the last 5 to 7 years, recovering from the 2008 recession. And we see a lot of interesting groups, especially the seed at early stage in Montreal, Toronto, Vancouver area, but, and maybe we'll talk about this a little bit later, also in certain other centers like in Edmonton around AI or Kitchener-Waterloo. So there's a lot going on the early stage. Area that where we need some support and more development is, of course, on the growth stage. And but we're seeing the industry progressing there as well.
Yeah, something that I would add, which I find really interesting coming into HarbourVest, is we have a global investment committee. So we have the same group of people reviewing all opportunities that we see around the world. So whether that's on the fund side, the secondary side, or the direct investment side, across all stages, every single opportunity is approved by the same four investment committee members. So that really sets the bar, and it's pretty interesting bringing opportunities, opportunities, and hearing about opportunities from around the world and kind of being able to benchmark in that way. So I find that particularly interesting. Maybe what I'd say about the Canadian market is the groups that we've invested in, the funds, I would say in particular, are really sort of more niche players that have carved out a very specific expertise, be it, groups like Avrio in the ag tech, food tech space, McRock, which does industrial Internet of Things, or a number of other groups that typically they've carved out a niche for themselves so that they're not, competing as generalists with U.S. funds, but rather competing on a global scale as, the top investor in the X category.
And I also want to pick up a little bit on something that Sophia said. I think what is very important in this industry, and we are understanding it because we have 35 years of data, is the fact that there is a pattern recognition in how funds evolve and how companies evolve. And it is a money ball game. It's a game of numbers and having the double and triples and not only shooting for the 10X. And that would give a consistent and sustainable performance.
That's very, very valuable. Thank you so much for that overview. I'm pleased to hear Canada is catching up. I know you do a lot of due diligence on many, many funds here in Canada. Are there emerging trends that you're looking to in the next 10 years? What type of funds do you think that you'll be backing? Absolutely, looking at niche players that are specializing, but in general, looking forward to the next 10 years, what type of funds are you excited about? What areas or emerging technology are you excited about? I'm sure that'd be very, very helpful for any entrepreneur to understand.
Well, everyone will always tell you that the first thing they look at, both in a company or in a fund, is the team. And what we had in the past in Canadian funds was the fact that people had a relatively short track record of being together. And maybe they were successful in separate business, but working together, and the chemistry and the dynamics of the team are essential. What we're seeing really some franchise emerging where the team are really gelled. And they also adding to their own just investment skills some type of lateral team that is kind of an impact team that will go into a company and within the first 100 days make a difference. We're seeing groups that are now creating their own products in order, and they have their own very specific thesis in order to be able to go in a company and really add value. Everybody will always tell the entrepreneur, you know, we are smart money. But traditionally in Canada, that was not necessarily the case. And now we're seeing some real smart money being developed out there. So I, to come back to your question, is in terms of trends, we see definitely contracts being built with people that were operator, know their stuff, and they are bringing good value to companies. In terms of industries, as you know, for technology investors, it's so hard to be, everything changes so fast. Obviously, today, artificial intelligence is the flavor of the day, and we really think it's there to stay. I think, Sophia, you have your views on crypto and blockchain.
Sure, yeah. We've recently, both out of Canada, but also out of our global program, been spending some time looking at funds that are investing in the crypto space. So it's very, very early days on that side, but looking more at kind of the picks and shovels infrastructure layer in crypto, and then starting to think about decentralized applications. I think we're, you know, as venture investors, I think we'd be remiss not to spend time understanding the potential impact of decentralization on both our existing portfolio and the types of companies that we're investors in, but also in the way that our business operates, with the way sort of venture and capital is raised. There just the number of ICOs we saw over the last couple of years. So it's very early days. It's unclear kind of which direction it'll take, but we're staying close, and we've committed capital to a fund in Vancouver, Version One. Part of their thesis is investing in crypto and in decentralized applications. And we've also invested in Andreessen Horowitz's crypto fund, so a dedicated fund focused exclusively on crypto. So we did that out of our global platform.
And of course, as Sophia mentioned before, we spent quite a bit of time in thinking at strategies that are really relevant for Canada. We believe Canada is extremely well positioned for ag tech, food and demand, both for preservation or just from food as a medicine, as nutritional, is increasing dramatically. So we think we're very well positioned there. And I don't think, like, we are technology investors, so we also do biotech and life science. Canada is extremely well positioned in terms in the corridor, Montreal, Toronto, and Vancouver itself for life science development. The time to market of companies now is shortened, and there are new models that allow people, investors, not to have to wait for three different FDA approvals, and that is something we should really keep an eye on. I think Canada is extremely well positioned as well.
Yeah, maybe just on the direct side as well, because we've been speaking mostly about funds, but on the direct side, especially given our current market environment, I think what we're trying to embed into all of our due diligence is really, you know, is this a need to have or a nice to have type of product, and what happens to this business or this industry in a recession? So that's always a component of our due diligence, and we're trying to stay disciplined around asking those questions.
You know, talking about the direct investing side, you do direct investing in Canada. Perhaps you could speak about what stage, what level, how, you know, what type of areas that you're currently looking to direct invest in.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've, as Senya mentioned at the outset, we've been investing on a direct basis in Canada for a pretty long time. Now that we have a dedicated fund focused on the Canadian market, that's accelerated quite a bit. So out of our entire platform, we'd look at opportunities ranging from, you know, venture and growth all the way through to buyout. Out of our Canada fund, it'd be really more the sort of growth equity space. So we define that as generally $5 million in revenue and above, although we're happy to have conversations with entrepreneurs and with companies earlier, because typically, you know, it's nice to build a relationship early on, and companies are growing so quickly. Top performing companies are growing so quickly, so it's nice to be able to build a relationship and be helpful to them even before they sort of achieve the scale at which we would invest. But typically, it's sort of high growth businesses. We've done a lot of business to business software companies, not exclusively that. We have a fairly flexible model, so it's a direct co-investments program. So we typically partner with a domain expert lead GP, which allows us to do a pretty high volume of transactions. We do fairly deep due diligence. In certain cases, we take board seats. In certain cases, we don't. I think the best way for an entrepreneur to think about us is really as flexible capital. So where it makes sense, we really lean in, and we have, you know, clearly we have a massive network, both of investors for follow-on capital, companies in terms of potential customer introductions. We have, you know, thousands and thousands of companies that we're indirectly exposed to. So we're always happy and willing to support our direct investments. And the most obvious way that we can do that is through our network. But, you know, we can be a more passive sort of venture investor than traditional VCs as a function of our co-investment model.
So do you invest alongside your VC partners, or is that not a requirement?
That's right. Yeah, that's not a requirement. We can invest, so we can theoretically lead. It's just it's definitely more of a sort of a time commitment. So in order to allow us to do a higher volume, we really like to partner. It doesn't have to be with GPs that we have invested in. So typically we won't lead, so we won't price around, but we'll come in and we'll do our full diligence and work alongside the lead GP. That's usually the best way for us to be involved is working side by side with the lead investor, whether or not we have a relationship and a pre-existing relationship with them. And then we'll come into the deal that way. And again, if it makes sense, be active and take board seats. If not, if it's a full and complete and productive board, we're happy to be more passive.
No, Sania, you were trying to jump in there.
Yeah, I was trying to jump and say a couple of things. First of all, sometimes this is a great way for us to try a new manager, so a new GP, and they bring us a deal that we find interesting, and together we do that. And that would be a good stepping stone for then investing in the fund the next time around. So that's another type of relationship we have. And another thing that we do sometimes for our entrepreneurs, one thing that we found in Canada, there was a kind of relatively naivety vis-a-vis the U.S. investor, like any good VC would be considered a great score. And one thing that we try to do is to really educate the entrepreneur that there are different types of GPs for every different type of subsector in technology, and some are better than others because they have a track record of growing similar companies. And because we have a database and the relationship, we sometimes act a little bit as advisor, and maybe it's not the highest term sheet, but it's the right term sheet, it's the right group to work with that company. So we've been trying to help Canadian entrepreneurs to really identify who is the best long-term partners. We always joke that this type of relationship is sometimes longer than the average marriage, so it's better to choose wisely.
You touched on it briefly, but it's so important to not focus on the valuation as the starting point. Getting the right people around the table is without a doubt the most important thing to a positive outcome. And getting 10 or 15 or 20% higher value when the company doesn't work out because you didn't get the right people around the table really was a waste of time for everybody. So, you know, I always emphasize, you know, it's the relationship and get the right people on board, and that's the best way to get the best outcome.
I agree. I always encourage the entrepreneur to do due diligence and to ask us to really and to ask people around and not to pick based on price only. Not at all.
The other thing that I always like to emphasize when we're talking about funding is funds and fund-to-funds effectively have a funnel of potential investments. And it's not that difficult to approach a fund or a fund-to-funds to be part of that funnel. You can say, I know I'm not ready at the scale of investment that you typically do, but here's the information and I want to build a relationship. It's pretty important to get on the radar of your funder before you actually need that money. And the more you treat it like... Go ahead, Sania.
You're hitting the nail on the head. I think what is very important is to show... a history and a track record of actually fulfilling what you told somebody you were going to do. So if you come and visit us, we have an open door policy, and you tell her, listen, I'm not ready. That's what you said, but this is what I'm planning to do. And then you come back 6 months later or a year later saying, look, this is what I've done. What do you think? It's a great process. If there is something to that I encourage people to do is to continue to update and come and visit funds and funds of funds.
That's
not wonderful. Everybody has open policy, but I think also that gives you a little bit of a flavor ahead of what type of partners you're looking for. And as I said, of course, everybody has limited time, but precise, to the point presentation is always extremely well received.
Excellent. Well, that was a very thorough discussion. Thank you so much. Is there anything else you wanted to add before we wrap up what I think was a great chat?
Well, I think, Owen, both Sophia and I are absolutely thrilled and excited to be here at this point, at this juncture in Canada. I think we have a perfect storm right now, in a good sense, to be able to build larger and better companies and make Canada, you know, a knowledge-based economy and give it a great future. I think it's very, very important that we continue to all pull in the same direction.
And thank you so much for, I know you travel all the time and you're currently out on the West Coast. Thanks for coming out to visit us. I know you've got lots of investments around Canada. So, you know, nobody can fault the visibility that you have, and taking the time to chat with us and give an opportunity for entrepreneurs and people in the tech community to hear what you're up to. It's really appreciated that you take the time to do that. Thank you so much, Xenia. Thank you, Sophia, for joining us. And, and again, thank you so much.
Thank you, Owen.
That's it for today's show. You've been listening to Between Two Term Sheets. This episode is brought to you by Alacrity Global, which brings investors, academic institutions, entrepreneurs, and governments together to create technology startup funds around the globe. Go to alacrityglobal.com to find out more about Alacrity's initiative.